Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Coming up shortly, we will have coverage of President Obama's speech at the United Nations, as he is expected, as you heard on that newscast, to call for new goodwill on Middle East peace, as well as other issues. We'll see how specific he gets, and we will get to that in a few minutes. First, at 9 o'clock tonight, barring any final pardons, Teresa Lewis will be executed by the state of Virginia for planning and assisting in the murder of her husband and stepson. If that comes to pass as planned, she would become the first woman executed by the state of Virginia in almost 100 years. As with many death row inmates, Lewis's case has raised controversy, but in her situation, much of the public outcry has been around her gender. There are some serious holes in the case against Lewis, but those holes raise other questions about gender and how women are treated in extreme legal cases like murder. Joining us now to update us on the Lewis case and the strong public reaction to capital punishment against a woman is Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor at Slate, who writes their jurisprudence blog. Hey, Dahlia, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi there, Brian. Thank you for having me.
So for starters, what are the basics of the case against Ms. Lewis?
Well, it's a pretty grisly case. And in 2003, she was sentenced to death because she hired two killers that she met at Walmart to shoot her husband and her stepson for the insurance money. And not only did she do that, but when she left the back door open for them, when they snuck in and shot them, she watched her husband bleed to death for an hour before calling 911. She rooted through his pockets for $300 that she shared with the trigger men. She's certainly not a savory character by any measure. The issue in the case is that the two trigger men pled guilty and were sentenced to life in prison without parole. She pled guilty and was sentenced to death.
And I gather that you believe that if it had been a man that had planned the death of his wife and son in this way, that the death penalty would not have been viewed as a big deal. The country wouldn't be having the debate that it's having about this pending execution, correct?
I think that's right, for two reasons. One is that we just don't get very excited about capital punishment when it comes to men. The second is that all the things that have really stirred the pot in the debate about capital punishment in the last few years in America, and I think have made even supporters of capital punishment go a little wobbly at the knees, all those issues about, you know, forensic labs that make mistakes and horrible DNA exonerations where it turns out that the person was factually innocent but found their way of death row, or the prosecutor worked in tandem with the police. All those issues that we've been hearing about from folks like the Innocence Project that make people very nervous that we're getting the wrong person really aren't factors in this case, because she did it and she admits that she did it. So this is not a case that's in some sense a hard case for death penalty supporters to love. But as you said, I think because she's a woman, it triggers a very different response.
I also gather that you think there were some gender issues in her being found guilty in the first place?
Yeah, it's very interesting when you look at the data, Brian. There's two equal and opposite forces that are at work when it comes to women in the capital punishment system. On the one hand, the data shows that women commit about 10% of the murders in the United States. They're only about less than 2% of the occupants of death row. So women at every stage of the process, judges and jurors tend to make excuses for them, even when they commit heinous crimes, because, you know, they cry and they look repentant. And we certainly have a double standard about whether a woman could do what she's doing. But at the same time, there's this opposite force that's at work, which is that women tend to be sent to death row for exactly this type of crime, where they kill their spouse or they kill their children or they kill their lover. This kind of thing happens all the time when men do it. It's not as likely to trigger the reaction in Americans that, oh, wow, this is an unnatural woman. This is a monstrous woman. And these are reactions that go back to the Puritan times, back to witch burnings, where we have very, very strong ideas about what normal, loving, nurturing women do. And we almost overreact when women commit certain classes of crimes. So I think the point I was trying to make is that on the one hand, women are massively underrepresented in the capital system, and I'm certainly not arguing for, you know, parity. I'm not arguing that we should shatter that glass ceiling, but I am saying that I think the kinds of things for which we tag women and we say they're monstrous and need to die are quite different from the kinds of things that men do.
On what grounds are people seeking a reprieve for Teresa Lewis? Is the case for her stay also a gendered argument?
It is. I mean, certainly there's two issues. One is that she clearly is borderline for testing for mental retardation. The state of Virginia sets that border at an IQ of 70. She's testing somewhere between 70 and 72. So I think one of the arguments that's being made or was being made by her attorneys is, if you're not going to execute somebody, the Supreme Court prohibits you from executing the mentally retarded. If you're not going to execute somebody who has a 69 IQ, how can you in good conscience execute somebody whose IQ is 71. I think that's a little bit gendered, because a lot of the arguments about her IQ go to how dependent she was on men and how strong men really manipulated her throughout her life. So I think there is a gender strand there. The other issue that they've brought up in these last-minute efforts to get clemency for her are quite gendered, and that is the judge who sentenced her, as I think I said, sentenced her to death even though the trigger men got life in prison because he thought she was the mastermind of this enterprise. He called her the head of the serpent. Well, evidence has emerged much later that, in fact, one of the two trigger men was quite clearly the mastermind. His IQ was, you know, 50 points higher than hers. He admitted to several people that he manipulated her, that he wanted to manipulate her. So there seems to be this, again, quite gendered strain in the argument that says she got worked. She got completely conned by a much smarter man, and that it's very, very unfair to sentence her to death when he was, in fact, the head of the serpent.
We've got a few minutes left with Dahlia Lithwick from Slate as we talk about the controversy surrounding the unusual planned execution of a woman tonight in the United States, a woman named Teresa Lewis on death row in Virginia, and some of the gender issues actually involved. I'll tell you one gender issue. We're only identifying her as Teresa Lewis. Every time there's a male killer on death row, we use three names for him. We hear about the killers Henry Lee Lucas, Mark David Chapman. I don't know, why is it always three names for men?
It is true. I think if you give your son three names, maybe you're disadvantaging him in the world. You know, another big issue, Brian, that is not present in this case, that is so often present, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said, I've never seen one of these death row appeals where they had adequate counsel. I mean, these are always very poor guys. I suggest they'd often have borderline IQs. I mean, these are not America's best and brightest. But she had a good attorney who just made a decision, a calculated strategic decision, not to take this case to trial. So right here at the very last minutes of her life, one of the things that her attorneys are begging for clemency on the issue of, she never went to a jury. A jury didn't sentence her to death, and that can't be right. But I do think you're quite right that there is this sort of, these are not happy, lucky people who get on death row. Happy, lucky people tend to have very good lawyers and get acquitted.
Do you watch The Wire? Because on that show, there's a character named Snoop, who's a cold killer. She's in many ways even more of a gangster than many of the men on the show, the characters, and seems to evidence very little remorse in her actions. But she's not committing domestic violence against a husband or a child. She's carrying out gang hits. And given that obviously fictional character, do you think that the courts would handle the case of Snoop any differently if she was a female gangbanger or a male gangbanger?
It's an interesting question. Again, I think the courts tend to be very, very, very hard on domestic violence committed against loved ones. So I think that there may be, I mean, again, you know, one of the problems with this system is there are so many people who have killed a husband or a child who don't go to the death chamber. And there's just a huge disparity in sentencing. But I do think you're right. I do think that we tend to see women who commit certain kinds of violence as quite different from women who kill their spouses or even worse, their children. And I do think that until we really address that in the capital system and really ask ourselves, wait a minute, does this go back to, you know, to Greek mythology and ideas about women and what is a natural woman? We're always going to have this disparity. It makes us very uncomfortable, but we're not very good at talking about it.
And did you hear that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, of all people, weighed in on the Lewis case? He said that the execution of this woman, if it happens as scheduled at 9 o'clock tonight, removes American moral superiority, and he has drawn an equivalency to stoning a woman to death for adultery. You think that's another case of equivocating killing any woman?
I think it's an incredibly bad comparison, and he's probably the worst person to stand up and lecture us about human rights. But I do think there is one kernel of truth in his comment, and it's worth thinking about, which is across cultures we have such different ideas about what kinds of crimes are the worst of the worst. And it is sort of interesting that he's saying, look, she just committed adultery, this woman just committed murder. Really, are they all that different? Now, that sounds laughable to us, but I do think it does flag this issue of, really, is this woman Ted Bundy? I mean, really, is this woman, you know, the worst of the worst? And it seems to me that that seems like the answer would be obvious, certainly right now in America. It seems an obvious thing that somebody who hires a hitman to kill her husband for the insurance is the worst of the worst. But I think that's a pretty freighted question at the end of the day. And, you know, culturally speaking, it's not completely outrageous in some cultures to say that a woman committing adultery is equally horrifying. I don't agree, but I think that there's a point.
Though I don't remember them stoning any men to death for adultery in Iran recently. Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor for Slate, who writes their jurisprudence blog on the issues surrounding the scheduled execution tonight of Teresa Lewis, convicted killer in Virginia. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll get to coverage of President Obama at the UN in a minute.